and welcome to the Kickstarter edition, October 5th, 2018. This is the show where we talk about the Kickstarter games we're backing, might back, and have already received and played. I'm one of your hosts, Kitty.
And I'm Chris, and this week we are backing Tiny Epic Mechs, The Runewild. We're going to be watching Cthulhu Mythos for 5e, Love, Lace, and the Babbage, Penguin Slap, The Shared Dream, and finally we'll do a review of The Path of Light and Shadow. I got through that pretty well, much better than I expected.
Yeah. Not too many hard words this week.
No. We should let people in on a little thing, though. This is late Thursday night.
I mean, very late for us.
Yes. This podcast is going to be posted less than eight hours from now.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's been a rough week. Like, it's been a long, long week.
It has been a long week.
So, all right, let's just get started so we can actually get through this thing. Okay.
Let's roll.
What did I back? I backed Tiny Epic Mechs because that's a huge surprise for everybody who ever listens to the show. And I've mentioned this, I think I've mentioned it multiple times to people I know, but we've mentioned it once on the podcast. And just to recap really quickly, this is the next game in the Tiny Epic series. It is Tiny Epic Mechs. It is a tactical strategic combat game where you're an item meeple running around, you're going to jump in a mech, you're going to try to beat up your opponents. It's a programming game, so you're like choosing on your actions ahead of time, you're going to play them out and see what happens, and it's going to be amazing, and everyone should own this game. It is only $20 if you didn't want the deluxe version, but that's crazy, so spend the extra $5, get the deluxe version. That is Tiny Epic Mechs. Ba-boom. How's that?
Very good.
What did you back?
It ends today.
So when you're listening to this, if you're driving right now, what I want you to do is look on the highway, find the next exit, pull over.
Be safe.
Be safe. Bring up the App Store on your phone. Google Play, Apple Store, whatever. Download the Kickstarter app if you don't already have it. Search for Tiny Epic Mechs. Then back it. I sound like I'm actually getting paid to promote this. I'm not. I just really, really love the Tiny Epic series.
I know you do.
So That's
speaking of things we love, Dungeons and Dragons, this week I backed The Runewild, a dark fairy tale setting for 5th edition Dungeons and Dragons. This is a 5th edition setting book and hex crawl in a forest filled with witches, fae, and things that go bump in the night. This is a really cool looking setting for a 5th edition game that I am theoretically going to run, but since, you know, they're not going to deliver this book until May at the earliest, I have time.
So it is the ultimate procrastination.
Yeah, right?
You can procrastinate forever.
Yeah. Oh, that darn Kickstarter took so long that, you know, yeah. But you have until October 18th on this one. There is a $15 PDF or $45 to go in for the deluxe hardcover, and that is The Runewild.
All right. You inspired me last week when you were looking at this, and then I was looking through Kickstarter, as I do, and I found this thing that said that we're back into the whole things we're watching. I haven't backed this yet, but I'm definitely going to back this. This is Sandy Peterson's Cthulhu Mythos for 5e. Now, Sandy Peterson is, if I remember correctly, the original guy who wrote the Cthulhu role-playing game. And he's written many, many things around us. This is the Cthulhu Mythos for 5e, that is D&D 5e. And I saw this and I'm like, all right, for some reason, I'm addicted to Cthulhu these days. I was anti-Cthulhu for a really long time. Now I'm very much on the Cthulhu train.
Jumped right up on that bandwagon.
I did. The tentacle grabbed me and pulled me in. So I'm like, I need to take a look at this. I need to own this once I started looking at it, and I will own this soon. So like the Runewild, this is the Runewild, but only if, you know, ancient ones and tentacle monsters and stuff existed, as opposed to bunnies and happy things that kind of hang around in your real world.
It is a dark fairy tale world.
My dark fairy tale world trumps your dark fairy tale world with tentacles.
Tentacles are gross. So you have, it looks like, until October 22nd?
We do. But so if you want the PDF for this, it's only $19 and the book is already completely done. So if you back this, you will get access to the PDF immediately after Kickstarter ends. If you want the regular book, it's a $49 book, which is typical for these types of role-playing books. There's lots of art, lots of cool things. And if you want the leather-bound book, which you can only get through Kickstarter, that's only $85. I'm not going to let you know what I'm going to back this at right now. It'll be a secret. In a future episode, we'll find out. But I'm excited for this, and I'm excited for, there are classes in this, there are backgrounds in this, there are monsters in this, there's like all kinds of lore. So if you like Cthulhu and you like 5th edition D&D, this book is a must-have. Sandy Peterson is like the quintessential, like he is the gaming Cthulhu master. Get this book. Again, I am really, really selling stuff on Kickstarter today. We need to get sponsored.
Right?
I know. So you have until the 22nd of October, which is great. I will be in Europe at that time, but I will have backed it before then. That is Cthulhu Mythos.
Yeah.
For 5e.
All right. So I am watching Lovelace and Babbage. And I think this is hilarious because we keep talking about programming games. I mean, like, it's not like computer programming. And this game isn't a programming game. It's a computer programming game. So this is, their blurb is, by the Tiny Epic series designer, a clever filler game that unlocks the dawn of computing with pioneers Ada Lovelace and Charles Babbage. So this is a real-time short game where you are programming a computer, but there's no, like, it's not a programming game. You are creating this shared computer where all of you are playing off the central board, trying to create, what are they calling? I don't remember the word, but you're trying to gain influence from patrons. It's really fun. They have, like, historic figures, and it's a 2-4 player game. I don't know why we have to call them filler games. It's short but good. Doesn't have to be something you do in between things. But yeah, this looks really interesting. Nothing like I've ever seen before. There's numbers and symbols flying all over the place. It reminds me a little bit of The Imitation Game, something where we're like in the dawn of computing. There are wheels turning and numbers and clicking. And it looks very interesting.
This does look very interesting. And I like looking at it, I have no idea how this plays at all.
Right?
Like it makes, there's sheets that you write things on, and there's cards, and there's gears, and there's patrons, like, and they look old schooly patrons, and there's subroutines that also look like old schooly patrons.
Subroutines. That's the word I was looking for.
those are old schooly functions, which are methods, which are, well, we can go all kinds of different names for them. But now, all right, if you don't back this, I'm going to back it on the slide because
only $20.
It's only $20.
Although there is a $30 deluxe version.
So it's only $30. Like, that's perfect.
The thing about this that I would go for the deluxe is it takes the $20 version. It's a pad of paper. And in the deluxe version, they just give you 4 whiteboards with that same stuff on there. So you can reuse it over and over again instead of having to, I don't know, start photocopying at some point.
So I am a professional programmer, and I will say that writing on paper is fine, but writing on whiteboards is far more productive. In certain ways. Because then you take a picture of it, and then that becomes your notes, which really no, because really the only time you programmers write on whiteboards is to explain it to other people, because we all know how it works. It's just, you know.
All right. So this one goes until October 23rd, and that is Lovelace and Babbage.
All right. I'm going, no, you're going to back this, and then you will teach me the game, and you can teach me how to program. It'll be the best thing ever.
All right. Now I come again in the notes here. Or are we going to jump down to you?
You know something? Why don't I go, then you can go, and then I can do a quick review. Because we're trying to shorten these things up a little bit, but we should do a little more back and forth. So I was at Gen Con, you know, this year and last year and the year before that and the year before that and the year before that. And I came, I have a friend who I see at Gen Con at Origins, and she's a great, her name's Alyssa, and she played this game called The Shared Dream and loved it. This is a cooperative game where you play one character amongst all the players, and you all had a shared dream, so, hence the name. That was a very good, aptly named game there. The interesting thing about this is there are like these games where he's like, I'm in a dream and this dream world is something. No, no, no. This game, you had a dream. Now you're in the real world and you have to fend off the dream world monsters that are coming at you. But unlike trying to pull them into the dream, you can pull your dream self back into reality. But there are consequences to that, because the more you pull your dream self into reality, the more you're likely to pull other monsters into reality. So this is a cooperative game. This is a reprint of a cooperative game. So it's the Shared Dream reprint. There's a number of expansions that come with it. And this campaign has one more expansion that goes along with it. And essentially what happens here is you are going to try, there's a number of scenarios, and you are trying to basically fight through the scenarios. Now, this is not a campaign game. I love campaign games. This is a scenario-based game, so you're going to choose a scenario. Your board is going to be randomly generated. You're still playing cooperatively, obviously, and like you're kind of picking the right characters to go with your group to try to like defeat that scenario. But this game looks awesome. Now, I did buy this entire game at Gen Con. I bought the base game. I bought all the expansions for it. It is literally still sitting down on my game, Ultimate Gaming Table. And I've been meaning to get this to the table for quite some time. And I really want to get this to the table. And this is just for an expansion. And I'm likely going to have to back the expansion too, because I have everything else. There's obviously tons of miniatures and all that kind of stuff. But I'm in a state right now where I kind of like co-op games better than other games.
Oh, I wish I could play that clip for Past Chris.
I know. Past Chris was so different. So there's this. So Sydney, my wife, for those who are new listeners, Sydney's my wife, and she has always claimed that she doesn't like co-op games. She's an alpha gamer. She like sees the whole strategy. She sees everything in front of her. I am also very much, I think we should do. So when the two of us are playing a game, we get really, really back and forth debatey about what we should do, which works out really well for us. So we have like two alpha players going into this game saying, we should do this, we should do this, da 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 da. But we're married and happily so, and we do come upon a solution at some point. And we should do this or that. So this game, I think, is going to be one of those games where I needed to get it to the table as quickly as possible. Because Alyssa, again, my friend who played it at Gen Con, she played it and she immediately bought everything. I said, I trust your opinion, so I'm going to immediately buy everything. And I'm going to recommend, no, I'm not, because I'm not selling these things. We're not getting paid by Kickstarter. I'm going to say, if you like cooperative games and you think this like dark, dreamy thing where you get pulled into the real world and there's some strategy tactics around it, if that sounds like your thing, check out The Shared Dream. It, like I said, it has been out, so there's plenty of reviews out there for you to take a look at to see if it's your thing. You can see a lot of Watch It Played videos. But the whole first version of it, plus the expansion, is now being reprinted. And for if you just want the expansion, if you already have the first one, it's only $45. If you want everything, it's $150. That means it's $105 for the base game, plus I think two or three expansions that come on top of that. So not a bad price. Yeah. And it has a lot of miniatures. That is The Shared Dream reprint plus expansion. Oh, it ends October 31st.
All right. So I am watching Penguin Slap, a last penguin standing card game for 2 to 4 players. So you are playing a penguin. There are 9 different penguins with different abilities. They are all hilarious looking. Some of them are real penguins. Some of them are not. One of them is a polar bear with a party hat on his face. It's great.
He's my favorite.
He looks pretty cool. There are some other ones, too, that are really fun-looking penguins. So you get to choose a penguin with a special ability, and then you are fishing. And there is a fishing hole to your left and right, and you can pick fish out of either of those. There are different colored fish that have different abilities, and the front and the back of the cards are colored so you know what you're fishing for. And you also know what your opponents have. There's different kinds of abilities that you can play, and you can slap your opponents to make them drop their fish, and the last one with fish in their hands wins.
I love this catfish picture, for the record.
The art on this game is amazing. It is hilarious. It looks like so much fun.
There's a fish missing teeth with a black eye. That's also, that sounds terrible, but if you look at the art, you're like, I like him.
It's hilarious. It's really fun art. I love the emperor penguin. He looks like a little blue penguin with like a crown and a cape. There's so much going on. There's some really like adorable art. I love it. And you have until October 28th, and it's only $15.
Why wouldn't I get this game?
And it's Penguin Slap.
All right. So Penguin Slap people, if you're listening to us now, we're going to buy this game. We suggest everyone buy this game. Also, if you want to sponsor us, go to patreon.com. That's tabletopgametalk.com/patreon.
All right. What are we reviewing?
Okay. We are reviewing Path of Light and Shadow. Now, this is a Kickstarter that I backed way, way, way long ago. And this game has been sitting on my shelf for literal months. And I finally said, okay, we're going to play this game. It is a deck-building game in a really thick box. But I'm like, okay, why? Oh, okay, the box is big. We're just going to pull it out. Literally, I've never opened the box until a couple days ago. When I put it on the table, I pulled it out, I set it up, and I said, hey, Sydney, we need to play this. So, the Path of Light and Shadow works a little bit like this. If you're familiar with deck building games, you have a hand of cards, you have a deck of cards. You're going to usually discard your entire hand of cards and draw 5, 6, whatever number of cards from your deck, and you're trying to get new cards in your deck so you can draw cooler, cooler cards in your hand. So this game works a little bit like that. However, it one-ups you on the deck, you know, what you can buy. Because you have a deck you're building from, but you have 9 different decks that you can buy cards from. Yes, 9. So there's 4 different factions in the game, and depending on the area you're in, you will be in a certain faction. Now, you don't necessarily buy cards from those factions. If your hero happens to be in that faction, you're just going to draw a card. If you draw 2 cards, then you're like, hey, I did great things for you. You should give me, like, you know, move me to the light side because I'm giving you the honor of living in my deck. That's really how that goes. So if you draw 1 card, no light side gain. You draw 2 cards, you get a light side gain. Now, mechanically, that means you have more cards in your deck, so you're not like optimizing what your draw will be. But, you know, that's fine. Now, there's this other concept in deck building games called culling. Culling is getting rid of a card from your deck. And if you cull cards, you are going to go towards the dark side. Most of these cards, or many of these cards anyway, will benefit you if you're on the light side or the dark side. Maybe you get +1 combat per every 4 points on the light side you are, or, you know, +1 something else for every point on the dark side. That's great. You can also upgrade these cards. So each card has an upgrade amount. So it's like spend X number of building icons to upgrade your building. And that's where the other 5 decks in this game come in. Yes, exactly. So you have 4 decks that you're going to be drawing from at the end of your turn. You have 5 decks that you're going to be upgrading from during your turn. And you're trying to just kind of build your deck up while moving towards the light side or the dark side. It could be, it's shadow, light and shadow, but it's light side, dark side. Now, on the board itself, you're going to move your little hero around. And your hero is going to try to take over these different territories. And the different territories have these little 3D structures, or big 3D structures, that are trying, like, our defense. So when you move into this thing, I'm like, I'm going to take over this area, and I'm going to have to play a number of combat that takes over the defense. I see what you're looking at on your face. Your eyes are glazing over. It's fine. It's late. I got you covered.
There's just so much going. I've never heard of an area control deck builder before.
Oh, exactly. You're following what I'm selling. All right. We're good. So you move in, you're playing your things. Now, if your opponent's not in this area, no big deal. You just have to play a number of combat equal to the thing, and you're going to win. Yay. But except for I play three cards, and they have an attack of three, an attack of two, an attack of four. Well, the attack of four, he doesn't actually contribute an attack of four. I have to roll four dice. Those four dice are going to randomly be about 1.1 ish attack power.
Is there like a flow chart for all this?
There is a little bit. So you roll the dice and you see whether or not you succeeded or not. Great. Yay. Now, if you're attacking your opponent, because they have the little flag on the top of the thing, then your opponent is also going to play defense, but they can only play defense if there's a little defense thing on their card. So you put your cards as an attacker. You put face down how many cards you're going to put. And your opponent puts face down how many cards they're going to put. And then you both reveal them. Woohoo, yay. And you take the biggest card that has the most defense on it. That card's removed, but you replace it with dice. And then you roll all the dice. And then you add all of it together. And if you get bigger than your opponent, woohoo, you take over the area. But you also, like, destroy part of the forts because you have this, like, stacks of, like, defensive walls and buildings and stuff. And those get destroyed. So, yeah.
There's another bullet point here.
Yeah, it's a little overproduced. I'm going to be honest with you about this. The game is not bad. It is not. If you've backed this game, I'm not trying to, like, dog it at all. And I'm not saying I would never play the game again. I'm saying there is way too much game in this box for what it is. So we played it. We enjoyed it. We think that if this was the only game and we were on a desert island, we'd be like, we'd play this game quite frequently and we'd be fine. There's a lot of variability in the game. You get to know there's four different factions and you get to know those different factions, and each one has like an emphasis on different types of strategies and stuff. So I'm going to move to the mountain faction and I'm going to do whatever. I'm going to move to the island faction and this is how I'm going to play. So there's a lot of flexibility there. In general, though, there are 9 different decks you're going to be drawing from. 5 of them are random. 4 of them are faction decks that you're going to draw randomly from the end of each of your turn. 4 of them are face up that you're, anytime you go into those decks, you're going to be searching for cards because you're upgrading them. 1 of them's face down, but it's still an upgrade deck. And then there's this card that you can play and it's like, oh, upgrade to this different faction. And you just randomly grab one of the cards on the top because it's a random upgrade. I didn't dislike it. At all. I thought the game was very... It was a good game. It was a good game. It is too much game for what I was looking for a deck-building game. I think there was more in the box than necessary. The most
complicated explanation of a deck-building game I have ever come across on this podcast.
Yeah, and I will say, honestly... Oh, wait. I didn't even get to the part where you have buildings.
Yeah, I was going to say we didn't even talk about the tableau building bullet point down there. I was just going to let it go.
No, you got to do this too. So every faction, you have a building board, and the factions aren't unique. So there's no asymmetry here. You all start with the same thing. One of the things I do like about it is you start with 7 cards that both of you have. So it's 4 of one and 3 of another. You are then going to pick a random advisor card, and I use air quotes, but it's just basically another card that's unique, so no one else is going to have that. Then you're going to place your character in one of the regions, and you're going to draw 2 cards from that region. So the way you start up your starting deck is, it's kind of neat because you're setting it up in a way that's at least, you know, 3 of the 10 cards are going to be unique. But then you have a building tableau in front of you, and there are 5 different tech trees, essentially, that you are going to deal with. So each card has an attack and a building option to it. And if you play cards with the build icon, you can build something in that tech tree. But you have to have at least 1 character from that faction in order to build buildings in that tech tree. So you also have to pay attention to that as well. Whew, yeah. Yeah. This game, like I say, if I didn't have so many games, I would really enjoy having this game around because you could play this a lot and not get bored.
It checks just a lot of boxes.
It really does. For
but
me,
maybe too many
too
boxes?
Many might be too many boxes. For me, if you're at Gen Con 2019, you may find yourself able to choose this game from a stack of a bunch of other games. Not because it's bad. It is not actually a bad game at all. It just is too much for what I'm looking for a game of this type. And that is Path of Light and Shadow. I really like it. I'll probably never play it again.
I like that review.
All right. So we are trying to keep these a little less than 40 minutes long, which has been our average lately.
Yeah, we did it.
We did it. So if you like the new shorter format, let us know. If you really love hearing us ramble on forever, you can let us know that too. That is our default mode, but we are trying to keep it.
I know, we're really bad at editing.
Editing? What's that? We'd have to cut out entire games.
I know, which is what we did today.
We did one less game per person, I think.
I know. Yeah, that's why we lost 10 minutes.
I think that's a good thing. We should pick stuff that's more valuable to our valuable listeners.
Yeah, we're making fun of this game for not being streamlined, but we need to streamline ourselves.
We do. Yeah. Oh, also, I will say, Path of Light and Shadows, incredibly easy to play, even though it sounds super complex. The rules are relatively simple. So, okay, if you read this last paragraph, I can play music and we can be done.
All right. Thanks for listening. The Kickstarter edition is produced by Tabletop Game Talk Studios, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Be sure to check out our on-topic episodes anywhere you find your podcasts or at tabletopgametalk.com. You can also follow us on Facebook at Tabletop Game Talk Podcast, Twitter at Tabletop Game TLK. I'm at Lawful Good Mom. Chris is at Game Master Chris. If you have a Kickstarter you think we should check out, email us at kickstarter@tabletopgametalk.com. And finally, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George Gia, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, and the SGC.
Until next week, keep playing games and having fun.